EFL, it's the Independent Football League podcast. Once a week, we convene to discuss all the big stories from the EFL. On this episode, the new manager bounce goes flat for the Baggies and for Borough. There's an incredible finish at the Valley, the benefit of a transfer embargo when the window is shut, another EFL icon takes the fit and proper guest test, and sexy time with Keith Kill. Once a week, every week, and totally independent, this is What the EFL. Hello, listener. If you are joining us again, thanks very much. If you're with us for the first time, thank you too. We can be found once a week wherever you get your podcast, talking all things Football League. You can get us on Twitter too. We're at EFL What the there, and we're still looking for a sponsor of the pod. If that could be you, email whattheefl@yahoo.com. I'm Matt Davis Adams. Each week, I'm joined by Adrian Clark and Sam Parkin, two icons of the Football League in their own mind, if nowhere else. Good morning, chaps.
I've never thought of myself as a Football League icon, but not until now, anyway. Maybe I am. Yeah.
Sam, you must. 100 goals. Yeah, that equals iconic status.
Nah. Someone did send me the front page of 442 the other day from back in the day. I was flanked by Darren Bent and Steve Sidwell. The top 100 EFL players, I believe, was the feature. So, I mean, serious company there, aren't I?
What number were you?
Nice.
Can't recall. I'd like to say top 30. But I can't really remember.
All right, well, let's just assume that
I looked older then, by the way.
Yeah, I agree with that. Scenes. Yeah, if you Google image Sam Parkin from his playing days, you'll see.
Well, it's just the hairline, isn't it? It's a sore moment when you accept that you're never going to have a haircut ever again. And that's why I held on for the extra decade.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah, well, if only Rob Holden's, hair surgeon had been around at that point.
Yeah, mate, 100%. 100% would have done it. But you were really rolling the dice back then. I've told the story before. Tommy Mooney got me on the Regain, but it lasted about 3 months because obviously I was having to like spray it on after training in front of the rest of the lads, which is, it's not the most comfortable of activities post-training when you're in a room of, pretty horrible guys as it was back then.
Well, listen, maybe you own a miracle hair cure company, save Sam a few quid on going the whole hog. If you want to sponsor the pod, remember whattheefl@yahoo.com. We will gladly take that from you, as will Sam.
I've always said I might just come back at 60 with a full head of hair and a ponytail. Might just do it in about 20 years' time.
Love to see it. Love to see it. That's the plugs out of the way. I mean, the plugs is a word for hair extensions, right? So that works pretty well. Let's get on to some news next. Not too much happening in the way of news in the Football League this weekend. So I wanted to start, Adrian, by talking about the Lancashire Hot Pot at the top of the Championship. Burnley and Blackburn, the top two after beating Reading and Hull. We've spoken about there not being a standout side in the division this season. Do you think Burnley are the closest thing to it? And do you think Blackburn can keep pace with them?
They might be. Yeah, Burnley have been impressive. If you look at all the data metrics, they're really, really high. They do everything pretty well. They press well. They keep the ball well. Create a lot of chances. Don't give a lot away at the back. Having said that, I think they've been a bit naive at times and gifted goals to the opposition. But teams against them have to work quite hard to create chances, Burnley. So, yeah, no, I think they're potentially the real deal. What's interesting about this rivalry, and they'll play each other again soon, is that they've got to within 2 points of each other with very, very different records. So Burnley are top, 2 points clear, 1-9, drawn 8, loss 1. Just tough to beat, really tough to beat. Blackburn Rovers have lost 7 matches and they're only two points behind. It's quite remarkable. Of course, they've won 11, which makes all the difference. They're the only team that's won that many matches. So, I don't think it's sustainable at the moment for Rovers. They're ranked, I think, 20th for expected goals from open play, punching way above what Opta would expect them to have scored from by now. So, yeah, they're sort of scraping by. I think they've had 7 one-goal victories. So normally when you look at teams like that, you would say, well, sooner or later, they'll start to trip up. But good luck to Blackburn Rovers. I like what John Dow Thomason is doing there.
Yeah, Sam Clarkey points out that the differences between them, the similarities, I think, are the coaches. You know, we've been told for years, haven't we, that to get on in the Championship, you need experience of the league and its uniqueness. Well, you've got two players here who had stellar careers at the top level of football, which never included spells in the Championship, and it doesn't seem to be affecting them too much.
No, I think that's a really good point, backing up what Clarkie's saying there. They looked so well coached. Obviously, there's not been massive changes at Blackburn, I would say. But to do what he's done at Burnley, Vincent Kompany, in such a short space of time, seems incredibly bright in terms of what he's doing on the training ground. I would suggest the budget's pretty good. That said, you're still looking at players that are coming from Belgium that wouldn't be earning fortunes. The young lads from Manchester City and the like, similarly. So I think this is a team that have picked up his method so quickly. And as Clarkie rightly said, it's hard to see a weakness. We felt early part of the season that maybe Jay Rodriguez wouldn't be the man to convert the chances. He's got a pretty decent return. And when we critiqued them after that, was it the Blackpool draw at home? We felt balls into the box when they were kind of under siege, they may get bullied. Well, they're starting to rack up some clean sheets now as well. So, and when you look at the type of attacking prowess they've got, the substitutes coming on affecting things, they look incredibly strong. I'm not sure Blackburn, like I felt for large portions of last season, are going to have the quality to stay the distance, but they've got real match winners and the two young lads who played in tandem in midfield at the weekend, and, you know, continually bringing through young players who produce in a championship. You know, I think they've got a really good structure there, and clearly a very, very intelligent coach as well.
Yeah, we'll talk about one of those impressive young players when we get to our scouting report later. Elsewhere in the championship, Coventry City are under a transfer embargo while they repay money owed to HMRC. They were forced to postpone their first three home league games this season. The pitch was ruled unsafe, and chief exec Dave Boddy said that caused a significant impact on cash flow. Their repayment is scheduled to be completed by December. He said, while we're unable to sign players, I would like to reassure fans the timing of this agreement means we can address this issue now, and that any transfer activity in the January window will be unaffected. So it's a kind of pointless transfer embargo at the moment, Adrian. But it's a concern, isn't it? You know, he's saying there, well, don't worry about it, everything will be all right in January. But if losing the revenue from three home games has this big of an impact that you can't pay your tax bill, that to me says that there's a greater problem at play.
Yeah, they're obviously sailing pretty close to the wind each month, aren't they, in terms of what comes in and what goes out. It is a lot of money, I guess, that three or four home games could generate. So I think it is a plausible excuse on this occasion. Probably the bigger worry is what's going on with the rugby club and the owners there with Wasps under administration, I believe. So, yeah, it's another sticky season off the pitch for Coventry City, I'm afraid. And I think this time around it has impacted the team a little bit. That delayed start has got them playing catch up, and it seems to have impacted on their confidence and not playing with that same belief that we saw last season.
Yeah, beaten at home by Blackpool at the weekend. You should give Mark Robbins a bit of a pass, shouldn't you, Sam, based on the issues that they've had with the pitch and that they're having off the pitch as well. As Adrian says, it's bound to affect things in terms of results at some point.
I think it has, and yeah, being a player in that type of situation must have been incredibly difficult, not having the normal start to the season after doing the pre-season program. That would have continued into the campaign. Adrian will know you need, what, six or seven games, I would say, to get that core match fitness. Some of the players are probably only just getting there now. They're really hindered by injuries at the moment. The one plus point is that they kept hold of their players and that Callum O'Hare's back. So I think they can rise up the table, but this is the last thing that they need. And I genuinely, and I think people get a little bit carried away sometimes, but I generally feel sorry for their supporters, genuinely. So it's just been a horrendous last few years. And I covered a few games at St Andrews, and I know that the players enjoy playing there. They've got some really good results and the pitch was good and so on and so forth. But for the supporters still to have this uncertainty around their club is just, it's unforgivable, really. And you want something to be sorted out. I know it's an issue with the rugby club and the council and various. It's very complicated, but, you know, it's such a historic club, isn't it, Coventry? You want to see this all resolved, and you want to see Mark Robbins and Adi Vivas do their job with the resources, proper resources available to them. So just a nightmare, continuing nightmare, really.
One to keep an eye on, definitely. Hull City still looking for a new manager as we record, although reports, Adrian, say they held extensive talks with Liam Rossignol over the weekend. Former Hull player. We've spoken about how highly rated he is as a coach, but the bare facts are he was sacked by a club in the division below Hull a couple of weeks ago. So it would suggest that perhaps the search hasn't gone as brilliantly as they thought it would for a successor to Shota Arveladze.
Yeah, it would suggest that, but he does have that Hull connection and he knows Andy Dawson. I thought, hang on, I'm sure Liam Rossini would have played with Andy Dawson. I looked it up and they were teammates for 3 years between 2010 and 2013. And Dawson has done a pretty good job, I think. His results have fluctuated, but by and large, he's done well, I think, with a pretty limited team. He's got some vital wins for the club. So if Liam was to come in, I think they would view it as a bit of a Hull City dream team, the owners anyway. Would I want to work at that club with that ownership? I don't know. I'm not saying it's a bad owner, but it's someone that's a little bit busy and interfering. And I don't know whether that's something that Liam Rossini will enjoy, but he'll want a job, won't he? He'll want to get back in. And for him as an ex-player, it's clearly attractive.
Yeah, that's the key point, really, I think, that Adrian's hit on there, Sam. For Rossini, he's not in a position to be picky, is he, having just lost his first job a couple of months into it?
Possibly not, although he's held in real high regard, isn't he? He seems to be rated. And, yeah, having watched the type of football that Derby played last season, he's clearly got something. But we spoke about it when he was let go. It's a bit of a risk if he's going to go in somewhere and try and, like Carlos Corberan to a degree, play quite, you know, stylistically nice football that's quite complicated and may take a little bit of time to bed in. You would think Hull City kind of need a clear idea and quick results, really. So it's another big project for him. The pull will be that he was a former player, I'm sure, as well, for him going there, because he'll have the support of everyone, you would imagine. So, yeah, I think he's going to get a good job, and he's probably not going to have to be as desperate as some guys that have lost their initial role, maybe in management. So I wouldn't suggest he has to jump at this, because there'll be more that come along. But yeah, I think the pull of it being his old club will probably sway him.
Listener, you can be laughing now, probably, as you listen to this, with Hull having appointed somebody entirely different. But there we go. We'll see if he rocks up there or not. Okay, next today, we'll look back on some of the weekend's key game. Let's start at the Hawthorns, where Adrian spent Saturday assessing Carlos Corberan's first game in charge of West Bromwich Albion. It didn't go brilliantly. Sheffield United beat them by 2-0. Firstly, Clarkie, what do you make of the appointments? He obviously did really well with Huddersfield last season, not so well in the couple of games he got at Olympiacos at the start of this.
I think he will improve them. He'll get them fitter. He'll get them sharper. He'll get them more tactically flexible. And I think he'll get them up the league eventually. But God, it would have been a wake-up call for him at the weekend. They were second best by quite a way. I talked in the build-up to that game about West Brom struggling at both ends. Poor inside the final third, rubbish finishing, and also not enough clean sheets and really bad defending. And that laid bare before our eyes, really. Two awful goals. I mean, they don't really have any centre-backs that are proper centre-backs. Connor Townsend had to do a job there. Dara O'Shea. Darnell Furlong at the weekend, all fullbacks really, and they struggled. Townsend made a mistake for one goal, Furlong for the other, and yeah, it was a bit of a mess. You could see what he was trying to do. The first 15 minutes, he had the wing backs high and wide, and you see they'd worked on things in training, but as the game went on, it became apparent that basically we just got to be a bit better at defending first and foremost. We'll worry about the tactical stuff, you know, in the long term. So we switched it at halftime to 4-2-3-1. They were a bit better, but yeah, they were well beaten. As for Sheffield United, very decent. Yeah, excellent away performance. Illiman and Jai, one of my favourite players, I think, to watch in the Championship at the moment. Just so slippery. Love his work. He can pop up on the left, the right. He comes short. You're running behind. Just they never got a grip with Illiman and Jai. And he scored a goal. He made a goal with a brilliant turn, run and pass. And yeah, he's an outstanding player. I think that Jai and McBurney has to be their number one strike partnership. They're the number two for me. I think they're a really good combination. So yeah, and at the back, they had their cigars out, really. I mean, John Egan and Basham and Ahmed Hodzovic, so easy for them. Yeah, defended very, very well. Carlin Grant, did not get a sniff. So, yeah, Sheffield United, well played. I think they will be definitely top two or three this season. I can't see them finishing outside that.
They scored here with their only two shots on target. They only 6 points off top spot, despite going six without a win before this match. West Brom, bottom of the table, only two wins from 17. Incredible, given some of the quality that they can call upon. Now then, Michael Carrick is the new Middlesbrough manager. He inherited a struggling team, and that was illustrated by his first match in charge, a 2-1 defeat at Preston. You can look at this two ways, I think, Sam, can't you? You can say, oh, that's a progressive appointment of an up-and-coming young coach who had a storied playing career. Or you can say, really? You're giving this guy who's never managed before the team that are in the relegation zone and hoping for big things? It's a risk from Steve Gibson.
Yeah, I think it is. Be interesting to see who he adds to his backroom staff. If he goes for someone with a bit of experience, potentially someone that he's worked with previously, either in his playing or coaching career. I know that he's got Jonathan Woodgate alongside him, but yeah, I think it's a risk. And I was asked the question on Saturday, what kind of style will it be? Well, we don't really know. Looking at that formation, I thought that was the interesting thing from this game, the formations of both sides. But Jonathan Woodgate put a lot of flair in the wide positions. He played Ryan Giles at left back, so I just looked at that. He played Akpom off Muniz, so yeah, thinking back to his Manchester United days and to his Tottenham days to a degree, they played, you know, fast attacking football, and that was something maybe that he was trying to get out of the side at the weekend. I don't think it bared fruit. It wasn't the best performance. It's something to work with, I'm sure. But yeah, I felt Akpom was the most obvious plus for them, who played off the front. He had 44 touches, which I thought was quite interesting in comparison to Reece up front for Preston had 19, Muniz had 18. So heavily involved, playing a little bit more withdrawn. Five shots, all in the box, got himself a goal. Clarkey will know him. I think there's a player there. He just needs a consistent run of games, probably confidence. I think he could get a good return of goals, and that's where they're struggling, I think, creativity and goal scoring in Middlesbrough. So he needs to kind of release the shackles on Isaiah Jones, who's having a bit of a poor spell right now, but he could turn it around. But yeah, Preston, I think as well, they changed their shape, which is the first time ever under Ryan Lowe, I think, in terms of the back three. He played a 4-3-3 here. A little story, he said that he'd said to Alan Brown last season, who made his 350th appearance for Preston here, a bit of a landmark for him, that he would never go away. He would never divert away from the back three, from the 3-5-2. And he did here, I think possibly just getting a little bit predictable. And again, trying to get that creative sparkle back, which has been missing for Preston throughout the season. So Reece got an amazing goal. Story got the winning goal. Obviously defensively, incredibly strong, him and Lindsay. I'm going to talk about Jordan Story a little bit later. But yeah, just a little bit more creativity needed from them. And possibly this little shake-up of the system might do that.
Yeah, Jordan Story, stoppage time winner, giving Preston just their second home league victory of the season. Listen, you're right. I said Middlesbrough were in the relegation zone. They're out of it on goal difference. They got a big game against Hull in midweek. Let's go into League One, Adrian. Not goals aplenty in the game between Peterborough and Cambridge, but raucous celebrations at the final whistle nonetheless. Apparently, this is a derby, a rarely contested one. First league meeting in 21 years. We've spoken a lot, haven't we, about Posh's struggles on the road. Different story at home. Seventh win from nine for them.
Yeah, and they did it in front of a bumper crowd. It matters. Over 12,000 were there. And look, so what if they don't, not that close, if both clubs regard it as a bit of a grudge match and a derby? I think just let them have their moment, a little bit like Palace and Brighton. It is a cool, it probably should be called the Mick George Group Derby, because they're sponsored by the same construction firm, aren't they? Which, incidentally, are based in Huntingdon, which I would say is absolutely banging between Peterborough and Cambridge. So well played, Mick George Group, for sort of spreading their love.
Clarkey, yeah. what is Cambridge's biggest derby?
Cambridge City against Cambridge City, but I don't think that one's been played too often in recent seasons. No, that they would regard it as Peterborough for sure.
Because the other way around, Peterborough Northampton's the big one.
Ah, okay.
See, because yeah. I played in that game, and there is not a lot of love lost there.
Colchester, but because they were separated by a road, the old A604. But I'm not sure that really counts. But yeah, no, the fans of both these clubs really care about it. And it was quite interesting. Grant McCann afterwards having a little bit of a dig. He said what Cambridge appeared to bring their entire home crowd to the game, which was nice.
He also said it's a blue day, which somebody else has got the copyright on that.
On the pitch, quite an even game, because Cambridge had some good chances in the match. Harvey Nibbs squandered two really, really good opportunities, and they'll feel that they should have got something out of it. They've lost six of their last seven now, though, Cambridge, so the wheels have come off a little bit for Mark Bonner's team, and the goal was absolutely avoidable, wasn't it? Did you see it? You see the goal? It was a simple corner, and Lloyd Jones and Paul Digby both went for it, didn't call, got in each other's way, and it comes off the head of Lloyd Jones and goes in the top corner. So yeah, they'll be frustrated. I think Peterborough won this without their forwards really coming to the party. It wasn't a day for Clark Harris, for Poku, for Mason Clark either. It was built around pretty solid defence. Fuchs did well, central midfield, and yeah, the shape was good. And that's three wins in a week for them. And Peterborough at home, we know that they're tough to break down. So yeah, a little bit. Like I said, with Sheffield United, expect them to be in the top four. I think the same does apply for Peterborough. Maybe I'll stretch it to top six. I would expect them to be in the top six. They haven't shown enough away from home to say they'll be automatic picks this year. But yeah, it's a big win that they really cared about. But ultimately, I think it was quite an even game.
Yeah, Peterborough fourth in the standings, Cambridge in 17th. We've got to talk about Charlton versus Ipswich next, a match which featured rogue whistles, managerial dismissals, eight goals, four of them coming in stoppage time. So it's 2-2 when the referees, the fourth official, puts up the minimum of 6 minutes added time. And then Ipswich go 4-2 up, and then that's job done, isn't it, Sam? Except, oh no, it isn't.
Yeah, I mean, just unbelievable, really. The finish, I've never seen anything like it. Never seen it. I'm going to sit through the 10 minutes that's been doing the rounds on Twitter, because you can imagine that, the Charlton fans just would have felt that the game was up, wasn't it? I mean, the scenes in the Ipswich end was amazing. That's a big old away contingent that you can take to Charlton. They were going ballistic. It was great pictures. But yeah, just the game management there. I mean, George Dobson's header as well. Has he lobbed the keeper there? And Walton's unbelievable. Has been unbelievable this season. So that was, a bit of a concern, because he's been so immaculate. And I spoke about the set pieces, and that's, it's no secret really at the moment. They can't defend balls in from wide areas. Only Bristol Rovers conceded more set pieces, and it's in open play as well. So if there's one criticism of Kieran McKenna right now, because we have to be balanced and can't get too carried away, Ipswich are still absolutely flying, but he's got to try and solve that. And whether that's bringing Burgess back in, he's got Keogh as well. I'd anticipate some changes being made in that regard. But yeah, I don't think we can be too critical of Ipswich. Just a couple of stats, 13 points more at this stage than they had at this stage last season. And in the corresponding fixtures, 29 points up, if that's even possible. That's
amazing.
Yeah, some statistics to show you just how well they've been going. But I wanted to credit Charlton as well. They changed the shape, 3-4-3. They've been 4-4-2 recently. I wanted to mention Ben Garner. Like, that's the most animated I've ever seen him. I don't think I've ever seen him celebrate a goal. So it took a red card for him to, like, the arms flailing around. It was, I've never seen anything like it from him. And the crowd certainly really got off on that. They really roared the team forward. There's obviously a little bit of animosity from that point on. They were a little bit disappointed with a few decisions. I think Kieran McKenna was as well. So there was a great atmosphere inside there. And the impact of the substitutes, I've said it before and I'll say it again, I think this Charlton squad is better than maybe what they're perceived to be or what their ambitions are for this season. And Ike and Blackett Taylor coming on, that's formidable at League One level. If only in an Ike's case, he could be fit enough to play more football. I mean, it's the same conversation we have about him. He just can't play 90 minutes, which is so unfortunate for Charlton, because I really like him. As an impact player, no one better. And those two had a big say in Charlton taking a point in this game. But still, I think Charlton should be, when you look at the type of player, Jack Payne on the bench, Lavelle, who they signed, they've got a lot of players, the better players from other League One, League Two clubs in that squad. And we shouldn't be surprised that they're producing big performances at home. That's another one after a series of good victories they've had. So great point for them. Not too concerned about either side. Ipswich are going to win the league, in my opinion. That's a bold shout. And Charlton should be around the playoffs.
They really should. I agree. I think they've got some great players. A really deep squad. Yeah, Chooks and Iki and Tubarakpom were both at Arsenal, of course. And I saw them coming through, and they went on some pre-season tours, and they were great. Really, really sort of stand out at the time. And you thought, well, they're going to come in and make it. And EK, one of these tall guys who's got a little bit of skill about them. And yeah, he can play sort of midfield or up front. Yeah, I don't know what quite happened with him and with Tubarakpom at Middlesbrough. A little bit similar. It's sort of fine margins, isn't it? I don't think there was much between him and Eddie Nketiah in terms of where they were. He ends up having to go. Eddie stays. It takes ages. And now he's the backup to Gabriel Jesus. So, yeah, those two guys have got the talent, definitely. It's just throughout their careers, they've not been able to produce a consistent season. I think that'd be the one criticism.
Well, Charlton are 4 points outside the playoffs after the weekend's games, and Ipswich just a point behind the leaders, who are Plymouth. Now let's go into League Two then. Hartlepool moving off the bottom of the table as they came from behind to beat Grimsby, leaving Keith Kill giddy with joy and hoping for a successful Saturday night. He said post-match he was hoping his wife would be in a sexy mood when he got home. She probably wasn't when she heard that he'd said that on television. To be fair, neither were the rest of us. But either way, whatever happened at Curl Towers on Saturday night, there was reason for Keith to be feeling good.
I think you're right, though. That's a passion killer, isn't it? Someone somewhere would have fed that line back to his missus by the time he got home. He talked about having to graft to make sure he enjoyed a good Saturday night. I think that grafting would have been a bit tougher on the back of that quote. But look, whatever gets you going. They stole the points, really, here, because Grimsby, for three quarters of the match, were a lot better than Hartlepool, who were bottom, struggling badly. But they produced two good moments, and that's all it was. Two good crosses from David Ferguson. And I think that Keith Curl will be buzzing off it, because he started at left centre-back, Ferguson, and he changed it in the second half and pushed him virtually into a left-wing position. And lo and behold, he's a little bit further up, and he can use his crossing ability to produce the crosses that won the game. So, yeah, it was a great comeback from them, and they needed it. Badly, they really did, because they've been struggling for a long, long time. So one of the moments of the game, though, was the goal from Grimsby with Gavin Holohan, who had played there. It was a popular figure during their rise back into the Football League under Dave Challoner, goal scoring midfielder, deemed sort of surplus to requirements not so long ago, and moved to Grimsby. Well, the goal he scored was brilliant, outside of the foot, into the top corner. And what stunned me is that it was a huge goal, effectively keeps Hartlepool on the bottom of the EFL, and behind the goal, you know, everyone's clapping. The Hartlepool fans were sort of, it was a very exceptionally polite round of applause, basically an admiration of Holohan, and maybe acknowledgement that he was hard done by at Hartlepool, and that they didn't really want him to go. So, yeah, it was an interesting moment. But, yeah, huge 3 points for Hartlepool. And, yeah, it might just get their season up and running.
Yeah, we'll wait and see. I love a pink kit, by the way, but that Grimsby one. Oh. He's shocking. Abysmal.
Shocking. Yeah, really, he's got horrible. No right. No, the bit in the middle. Yeah. What's that all about? That was like a rugby top, wasn't it? And we don't like rugby tops. We don't like egg chasing on this show, do we?
Not good from the fishing enthusiasts. Right, we'll round off our weekend review with AFC Wimbledon beating Harrogate by 3-2. Topsy-turvy game, this one. 1-0 up, then 2-1 down, only to go on and win it with the very definition of a Route 1 goal from Josh Davison. Long punt from the keeper, and he scored. I was going to say, Sam, oh, they really needed this, Wimbledon and Johnny Jackson, but they're three games unbeaten now. I mean, you've got to beat Harrogate at home, given the start of the season that they've had. But they'll be hoping that this is a sort of transformative period for them now, weren't they, after a sticky spell?
Yeah, I think a week ago that was a huge win against Rochdale on the back of losing at home to Sutton, but a 7-point week. Yeah, things are looking better. I think they'll be balanced, though, considering what AFC Wimbledon want to be and what the supporters perceive themselves to be. Beating Harrogate at home, of course, with respect, there's bigger fish to fry, they would like to think, in the months and years ahead. But in isolation, it's a brilliant win, considering they were 2-1 behind. And I think Johnny Jackson got his substitutes right here. You know, all three had a real effect on the game. We've not mentioned Kyle Hudlin on this show before, I don't think. We should have done. 6'9".
I saw him in the playoff final in the National League.
I don't know if it's in the World Book of Records, but I think he is perceived to be the tallest footballer in the world or something.
He is lanky.
So he's come on. Yeah, I think Solihull Moors, wasn't it, Clarkie, made his name, went off to Huddersfield. But he came on, yeah. Alfie Bendall, who's a 17-year-old midfielder, he made a difference with a ball in, and Courtney Senior scored a goal. So, yeah, effect from the substitutes. Went a little bit longer in the second half. The possession dropped, certainly, so that would suggest so. A really good victory, and I don't know if that'll be a bit of a blueprint for moving forward. They've certainly got the forward player to do so. You saw that with the winning goal, which is actually a really good pick out from the goalkeeper, Zanev. I think he finds Davison, who's making the run in beyond, and he'll, what's the terminology, chase
lost causes?
Crisp packets, I think John Sheridan used to like. Something like that. Crisp packets in the wind. Yeah. So he's a really effervescent front player. You know what I mean? He gives absolutely everything. Josh Davison, 8 goal involvements for him now. So had a good start to the season. The one flaw, similarly to Ipswich, 11 set piece goals they've conceded now. So that's something for them to work on. But in the first half in particular, Harrogate didn't have a touch in the Wimbledon box. I think Wimbledon had 9. So that showed you that they were in control of that game. And despite Harrogate getting their nose in front, it was probably the right outcome.
Yeah, a couple of games in the cup coming up for Wimbledon, but we'll find out whether their newly discovered league form continues. Their next two in League Two are tricky, Leighton Orient and Salford next up for them. Next up for us is the Fit and Proper Guest Test. Taking the Fit and Proper Guest Test this week is the former Shrewsbury Wolves and Wales midfielder turned pundit, Dave Edwards. Dave, thanks for joining us. You're on duty for Sky tonight as we record. It's the Plymouth versus Exeter game. How are you finding co-commentary generally? You kind of slipped into it nicely post-playing days. Are you basing it all on Sam Parkin's storied career?
Yeah. I played with Sam and I followed his career closely. So when I saw he made that step, it was something I was definitely interested in. But now I've... the co-com stuff, I really, really enjoy it more than, say, the normal punditry stuff where you're kind of in the studio or doing interviews and things like that. The co-coms gives you a bit more of a chance to elaborate on sort of what you know football wise and what you can see happening in game, and you have to be on the ball, you have to be reactive. It does take a lot more work than, say, maybe just going into a studio and commenting at halftime and things like that, but it's something I really enjoy, and I was quite lucky to fall into it with Sky through some Wales stuff initially. I retired from Wales when I was 30. A little bit selfishly, because I was on the fringes of the Wales squad. I was always getting picked, but I was probably first or second sub in midfield. So it's not like I was guaranteed to play every week. So after we did well in the Euros in 2016, then we didn't qualify for the World Cup in 2018, I just felt like it was a good opportunity for me to come out and be one of the first lads out of that 2016 squad who's retired. And then with that came a lot of media opportunities in and around that. And then I was sort of quite lucky to do a few Wales games. And then they needed someone to do a Wales game on co-coms and just said, can you do it? And with no experience or guidance or anything, just chucked me into a 0-0 draw against Trinidad and Tobago.
And you knew loads about the Trinidad and Tobago team, yeah. I'm sure. That kind of chimes with the rest of your life away from football, doesn't it? And that you got your fingers in lots of different pies. Is that something you were aware of quite early? You know, as you say, when you got to 30, you were already thinking of the next step from when you hung up your boots.
Yeah, to be honest, I think I've done it ever since I started playing football. I was never a kid who was... knew I was going to be a footballer. I wasn't like blessed with loads and loads of talent. I was quite late into football, really. I didn't sign to Shrewsbury until I was in sort of the second half of my year 11 in school. So I'd already kind of mapped out I wanted to go to sixth form in uni and wanted to be a football physio actually at that age. And then I got this opportunity to go into Shrewsbury and it was just too good to turn down. I thought it was one last chance to give a go at football. At the time I was playing pub football in adults league on a Sunday and playing in a Shropshire adults league on a Saturday when I was 16. So it was a bit of a step up, but I did that. But when I signed for Shrewsbury, I always carried on wanting to do my A-levels and things like that. I didn't want to just leave it all and just go in on football. So I got my A-levels done. And then I think the big thing for me, when I was about 22, 23, I started to get a few injuries. And I just felt that I didn't know if football was going to be there forever. So I really needed to start knuckling down on what I wanted to do.
Dave, obviously started at Shrewsbury, your last professional club as well. And it's difficult to say it when you're playing and you're in it, but was that always the plan in the back of your mind? I mean, it worked out brilliantly, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And it was. I always wanted to go back to town. Massive Shrewsbury fan as a kid. So it was amazing for me just to start out there and do well. Then I went on this sort of footballing journey away from Shrewsbury. But I always kind of stay quite local because I had 10 years at Wolves. It's only sort of 40 minutes away for me, so I could still live at home. So I've been one of the few footballers who has spent probably 90% of my career living at home. I've been so, so lucky. Settled life for my wife, my children, all those sorts of things. But to come back to Shrewsbury and finish it off was going to be perfect. And the only downside of it is when I finished at Shrewsbury, it was COVID, which was a bit rubbish. There's no fans in the stadium for my last season. And my body was just about giving up on me at that point as well. And so they probably didn't see anywhere near the best of me.
You mentioned about our time together at Luton. Obviously, I was on the sidelines for the majority, if memory serves me right. But it's something I've thought about you often when I saw you go on and flourish, obviously, in the Premier League and internationally. How did you manage to focus on your football during that period at Luton? Because if memory serves me right, it was a really fractured dressing room. It wasn't a good atmosphere amongst the players. The club had been relegated, change of manager. I thought a lot of agendas in that dressing room, people that didn't want to be there. How did you produce? I mean, it was only for a matter of months, but was that a difficult time for you to focus?
I think it was naivety. I was still young. I was come from Shrewsbury and I was 21 years old playing the next league above. And whilst the club went into administration, you got lads there who are struggling to pay their bills and things like that. Cause we didn't get paid for 3 or 4 months. But for me as a kid, I had no outgoings. So it didn't affect me that much. And I was just enjoying living away from home and playing football. I never really probably saw you being a few years older than me. And if it had happened to me in my later 20s, then I'd have really understood the dynamic of the dressing room. But I was just a young kid there playing football and just thought it was almost normal. Just carried on. And then all of a sudden, when we got to that December time and they kind of said, anybody who wants to go is worth any sort of money, then you can go.
That's why I stayed, yeah.
But then all of a sudden, my agent was kind of saying, right, you've got a real good opportunity now. You can move on quite quickly. And I was never expecting, I was only at Luton for 6 months. So to go from League Two with Shrewsbury, 6 months at Luton, to then to Wolves, and a full year later, we'd won the Championship and I was in the Premier League. So it happened in such a short period of time. And I was just a young lad and my career was just going up, 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 up. And it was hard to take it all in. It wasn't until I just mentioned then when I got to sort of 23, 24 and had some injuries, it started to really kind of think, oh, football isn't all great and isn't all the glory and the stars and things like that. And that's when I started to say knuckle down on looking at post stuff.
Taking back to Shrewsbury, it's most kids' dreams to play for the team that they support. What was the reality of that like for you? Does it bring an added pressure or were you just like, every day I'm living the dream here?
Literally every day I'm living the dream. I couldn't believe my luck and it was my everything. I never had ambition. I genuinely never had ambitions at 17, 18 to go and play in the Premier League and do all that. I was playing for Shrewsbury and that's all I'd ever wanted. So the side which probably wasn't as glamorous was meeting my hero so quickly because I was watching Shrewsbury 14, 15, 16 years old. Then all of a sudden I'm in the dressing room with them and they're not the superstars I had held on a pedestal there. Lower league footballers who want to be a Jack the Lad all the time. And yeah, that was a bit of a come down to earth, but I just absolutely loved it. I did. And it was in a world when I was playing on a Saturday, going out with my mates on a Saturday night in Shrewsbury, probably going out in the week as well. And it was just a young lad who's loved playing football. And yeah, it was great.
Yeah, very similar for me when I started working with Sam. I've got to say that stardust quickly gets wiped.
Well, you were going to ask him about Nigel Jimson there, Matt. What was he like? One of your heroes.
Petrified of him, I was.
Yeah. You wrote your autobiography, didn't you, a few years ago, back in 2017. Did you have to kind of live by the mantra that the pen is mightier than the sword, somebody once told me. So you can either use that to just bury people you don't like, or you can be a bit kind of nicer and more rounded. Which tack did you take?
Definitely the nicer one. It's not normal for someone to write a book in the middle of their playing career or sort of towards the end. But with the Euros, I just thought it was such an amazing insight for fans to actually know what kind of happens in the day-to-day of a summer tournament. And I think everybody wants an insight to those sorts of experiences. And I felt that I could do that and then combine it with my football career up to date. And I just started I broke my metatarsal leading into the Euros, and I was getting more and more involved in sort of media journalism side of things. So I actually wrote a blog on coming back from my injury, and it was really well received. And that kind of gave me the confidence that I could then go on and write a book. And I had the amazing help of Paul Berry, who's was the press officer at Wolves at the time. And we spoke about it on and off, and I wasn't 100% on it, but yeah, once we started writing, it was great. I'm glad I did it. It's something I've always wanted to do. I'd say it's a little bit early in a career to do one, but it just felt poignant at that time for Wales.
Hey, with the legacy that you've left, obviously at Shrewsbury and at Wolves, did you have the conversation with either or both about staying on in some capacity?
Not really at Wolves. When I left Wolves, they just changed ownership to Fosun, and the club was completely different to sort of my earlier years. So it was changing at a rapid pace. They're still amazing now. I go watch games, and they are, the hospitality they provide for me and my family is incredible. But that's never been a conversation. Although I do think if I did want to go into coaching, I'm sure they would open the door for me to go and sort of work in with the academy and things like that. Shrewsbury's a bit more. When I finished and I had a conversation with Steve Koch at the end of the season, he kind of said I wasn't going to be offered a new contract if I wanted to stay on in a capacity. Whilst he couldn't promise me a full-time role, then I'm more than welcome to come in any day I want. And I still speak to him now. He still says the same. If I ever want to go in there and do anything like that, then say the door's always open for me. But coaching, I don't think's ever been for me. I think after playing for so long in football, it's nice to take a step away. And I think that's where the media is so amazing, because you're still involved in a little way, but you haven't got that day to day where your emotion is just completely run on results. And you'll know that more than anyone, Sam, is when you have injuries, you're as low as a snake's belly, aren't you? It's horrible. But then when you are playing and you have bad results, you take that home to your family. It's as amazing as being a footballer is, you live on a roller coaster of emotion. So I was glad to step away from that side of things. And I say my mental health is definitely a lot better now, and I'm a lot more calm, thoughtful in everything I do now compared to when I was playing.
And as we mentioned, you've got loads of other interests outside the game. We'll finish on a couple of those as we round off with our super serious questions like we always do. Firstly, I note that back in 2019, you had the honour of switching on the Christmas lights at Leighton Park in Shrewsbury. How did it go? What kind of technique did you employ? Were you literally just press the switch and wave, or was there a bit more of pomp and circumstance? Is there any advice you'd give to any aspiring Christmas tree light switchers on listening?
Well, I knew the kind of the organisers quite well, and they'd asked me, and I'm always sort of willing to help. I was just literally ushered to this electrical box, pressed that. I was a little bit nervous at the time, but no, it all went well. There wasn't a lot that I could do wrong. But yeah, anything like that, especially in the community in Shrewsbury, then it's always nice to be a part of that.
I've done it twice in Swindon. You never come to me for that type of insight, Matthew.
Yeah, well, I can imagine how you'd do it. I'm sure it'd be pretty functional, but, you know, appreciated. Dave, last question. This relates to property, which I know you're interested in as well. Were you fuming when Dion Dublin got the Homes Under the Hammer gig, and how do you think he's done?
He's done amazing, and it was so left field, wasn't it, when he first got onto the show. You thought, because something I always liked, before I was interested in property, I just find it interesting how people could do up a house and sell it on, and then you see Dion Dublin there, and yeah, I was very surprised. But he's done obviously really well in his punditry world, but yeah, he's got that gig. I don't think anyone can take any property related stuff off him anymore.
No, he's the front runner for that, that's for sure. What do you reckon then, Sam? Has Dave passed the fit and proper guest test?
He's a former teammate, and I'm definitely going to have to bump into him from time to time. So absolutely. Flying colours.
Yeah, same for me. Well done, Dave. You've passed. Many thanks for your time today. We look forward to listening to you on Sky later.
No worries. Cheers, guys. Thank you ever so much.
Many thanks to Dave Edwards for joining us. You might have twigged there, listener, that Clarkie wasn't with us for that section of the show. We weren't just ignoring him. Don't worry. We'll have another fit and proper guest test next week. Next today, though, it's our scouting report. All right, Adrian. You are sticking to what is becoming something of a theme for you. You've picked a talented youngster on loan from a Premier League club. This one is tearing it up for Blackburn at the moment. Tell me more.
He could be one of the best loan signings of the season. This kid is good. He's a really good footballer. It's Tyler Morton. Liverpool fans will know about him because he featured for a few games last season, mainly
all over the place as well, didn't he? Premier League, Champions League, League Cup, and FA Cup. He completed the set.
Jurgen Klopp loves this kid. He loves him. He's just turned 20, so he's technically not a kid anymore. So he's getting to that key age where you've got to be playing first team football. And what stood out for me watching him this season is the swagger that he's got on the ball. He's very, very comfortable in tight areas. He'll just drop a shoulder, beat a player, or use a little neat trick or flick to take the ball past someone. This in central midfield, which is where, in essence, he plays. Very, very calm. And then he can zing those balls, those long diagonals to the flanks. He can feed it into the front. I'm not saying he's finding the championship easy, but when he's on song, I think he's a player that makes the championship look quite easy. And that's a huge compliment because it's fast and furious and not easy to shine in. So yeah, I think he's a player that's destined for the Premier League. I think he will get his chances at Liverpool. But for this season, he's going to thrive for Blackburn, isn't he? I think another kid alongside him at the moment, Adam Wharton, who's getting the odd goal here and there. So between them, they've got a lovely little combination. And I think he's benefiting from what Harvey Elliott did at Ewood Park. So he goes there, shines, goes back, becomes a Liverpool player. And I think they're looking for a sort of rinse and repeat setup, even though it's obviously a different manager now with John Dal Thomason. They like the club. They like the style of football. And he's shone. If there's anyone out there that hasn't seen, there's a TikTok. Now, I'm a big fan of TikTok, as I'm sure you'd imagine. I'm always on it. But yeah, there is a TikTok minute or so of his performance against Rotherham recently. Just taking the piss. He's literally taking the piss with the flicks and tricks and the way he's darting past players. It was outstanding. So yeah, Tyler Morton is, I think he should in theory get better and better as the season goes on. So yeah, they've got themselves a great lone kid there.
Yeah, and like you say, it can be a goldmine for EFL clubs if they strike up a good relationship with a Premier League club and then one successful loan follows another. So we'll see if that continues. Sam, tell me the story about Jordan, please.
Yeah, I just thought it was time we gave a little bit of credit to Preston's 76 clean sheets in 15 games. I could quite easily be talking about Liam Lindsay here, by the way, because when you're doing a little bit of digging and looking at statistics, those two like top the charts in every department. So I'll come on to that. But I just thought, he's 25 now, Jordan Story, and he got this incredibly quick move from Exeter. We're not one of the Exeter prodigies we talk about very often or gets mentioned in the same breath as maybe the likes of Matt Grimes and Ollie Watkins, obviously. So, yeah, I just thought 18 games he played for Exeter before he moved to Preston. If you go back to the back end of last season, Ryan Lowe clearly didn't fancy him. He allowed him to go out to Sheffield Wednesday. And I read a few of the comments from Ryan Lowe at the time, and I look back over them, and he said, like, he's got a future here and all that, and he's got all the attributes to be a Preston Town a Preston North End player for years to come, etc. But if you're allowed to leave and a new manager is trying to put his stamp on a squad with a new philosophy, a new style of play, and you don't fit into that, quite often your days are numbered, I would say. So I think this is testament to this lad's character, first and foremost, the level of the performances he put in at Sheffield Wednesday. And he's come back and he's continued in the same vein. He's been a massive part of this turnaround, this defensive solidity that they've had this season. I don't think Ryan Lowe fancied him in the back three, which is predominantly, as I've already said today, his style of play. And Ed van den Berg last year, who was probably more comfortable playing into midfield. That's where Story probably still has to improve, but his confidence seems to be coming back in that regard. I think it helps no end having Liam Lindsay next to him. Left footer, gives nice balance. They are so much better as a unit. You lose one of them and they lose so much Preston. So he's having an incredible season. He's very, very aggressive, strong in the tackle, top for interceptions in the league, third for shots blocked in the league. His partner Liam Lindsay is top for clearances. Story's just 12th in that department. But yeah, this has been a great turnaround, I think, in his Preston career. And at 25 years of age, I think if he keeps improving, and he will, playing in the football inside and with his confidence back, then there's no reason that he couldn't maybe go and play in the top division. I think at some stage he was so highly thought of. I think he was the old Rio Ferdinand of Exeter or something along those lines when he first moved up to Preston. So great to see someone, you know, turn it around a little bit at a club where maybe his days look like they were numbered.
All right, we'll call it a heartwarming story in that case. Jordan Story and Tyler Morton, the subjects of this week's scouting report. Now, before we go, of course, it's time for Tweet of the Week. Bit of a riff on the theme here, chaps. I want to get your opinion on this. This is something we see a lot, but I don't think we've commented on yet. This is when a footballer apologises in a tweet post-match, specifically Mansfield Town's Hiram Boateng, who got sent off in their 5-2 home defeat against Swindon this week. He said afterwards, "Let my teammates and the fans down yesterday, and I'm gutted about that, as I know once you go down to 10, there's little chance of getting something out of the game, already a goal down. I'll be working hard to make sure I put things right when back on the pitch." Sam, apologies for getting sent off on social media. You having it, and why not?
It's all down to the nature of the dismissal. And my memory is a little bit hazy here.
Second booking.
I think he stood in front of a quick free kick, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So the nature of that suggests that apology is probably necessary. I would like to see it done post-match in video form in an ideal world, and that to go out and he can be a little bit more heartfelt rather than the tweet. But I haven't got too much of a problem with it. That's my answer.
Adrian, what disappoints me about this is all the replies are saying, "Hey, don't worry about it. You've apologised. We would have lost anyway, blah, blah, blah." You just want somebody to go, "Yeah, you ruined that for us, Hiram. Well done. Yeah. Hope you spoiled your weekend."
You think he was fishing for compliments? You think that's
very
what it
much
was?
So, yeah.
He's looking for a little bit of a social media.
He must have had an all right game as well.
It didn't, no punctuation in there, not a single emoji as well, so it was very, very solemn, wasn't it, in its delivery. I think Sam's right. You know what stops players that have a nightmare, someone that gets sent off, what stops them going to their press officer and saying, "Look, can I do a quick video? Can you just do an interview with me just for 90 seconds? I just want to apologize." I think that would be much better than a sort of phishing tweet. But yeah, I think Sam might have hit onto something there.
It takes a little bit of courage probably to do that, if that makes sense. But that's the world we're in now, right? Like the social media manager or whatever you call it is on the pitch now, getting the celebration straight off the back of the final whistle. So that's kind of the modern era that we're in. So yeah, I'd like to see that. Maybe it just take one person to do it and not necessarily just do the apology, but answer a few. He could talk about the game, can't he? And he can.
Yeah, you don't always have to hide, do you? When you've had a bit of a shocker, the inclination of the footballer is to just go into hiding and hope for the best and come out next week or in 2 weeks' time. But yeah, I think openness is good, personally.
I'm with you, Clarky. I think we needed a yellow emoji, a red emoji, and a monkey doing their hands over the face.
Yeah.
Emoji.
I think a tear, maybe a single tear one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Work to do, Hiram, basically. While you're suspended, maybe have a good think about that. That's going to do us for this week's episode. Great to have Dave Edwards with us. Many thanks to him for his contributions, to Adrian, to Sam too. Remember to give us a follow at EFL What There. We'd really appreciate it if you could give us a nice review as well on iTunes or wherever you listen. It helps other Football League fans find the show, and hopefully they will enjoy it as much as you hopefully are. If you want to sponsor the pod, remember it's whattheefl@yahoo.com. Do drop us an email. You don't have to be a maker of hair replacement products. Anybody will do. Thanks again for joining us today. We appreciate all the support that we're getting from you. Do tell a friend. We'll be back with you same time next week. For now though, goodbye.